It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. In your health today, college bound with ADD. Adjusting to the independence that comes with campus life can be a challenge, especially for students with attention deficit disorder. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports one young woman worked with a personal coach to learn how to avoid the pitfalls of distraction.
Lots of us find ourselves a little scattered at moments. Who hasn't spaced out during a meeting or BlackBerried their way through a conference call, only to find out later that they'd missed the one important point? For 19-year-old Emily Allgaier, it's not just the result of too much technology in her life. In school, she recalls the moments a teacher would call on her as she happened to be staring out the window.
Teacher would say, "You understand, Emily?"
Yes, a little bit.
Emily's mother, Betty Overby, says her daughter didn't act out or cause problems. She was shy and creative and early on made very good grades. But in middle school, things changed.
The first time I remember was in sixth grade when she wrote two beautiful book reports and didn't turn them in, and they were in her backpack. And so she got her first D in sixth grade, and we were just completely stunned and appalled.
The same thing happened in French class. Emily seemed to be learning the language, even enjoying it, but didn't finish assignments. Overby says she herself is very detail-oriented, so her daughter's behavior was a real mystery. Here she had this bright child who just couldn't keep it together academically. Early on, school counselors dismissed the idea that Emily needed special assistance. In ninth grade, when she was finally diagnosed with ADD, medicine did help. Her grades went up, but she stopped taking it because she felt nauseated and lost weight. So Emily needed to find a different way to solve her problems. Her family eventually got help from a group of psychologists who specialize in attention deficit coaching. Kathleen Nadeau heads the group.
I am a believer in doing absolutely everything you can to get your brain to function properly. We are very reactive to our environment, so we need to carefully choose the environment we put ourselves in.
Take, for example, homework. Organizing is everything. Nadeau's partner, Kara Gubick, says she doesn't just preach about the importance of organization, she shows it. With Emily, she sat down with a daybook planner, and in a very visual way, she sketched out how to break big projects down into smaller chunks.
Things that may seem simple to people who don't have ADD, like we'll just have a binder for each subject out and clear your desk. I mean, when I think back to college, I always cleared off my desk before I started work. I think that's just a natural tendency that most of us have. But for someone with ADD, it may not be an automatic thought.
Emily's now starting her second year at Pacific Lutheran University, and her mom was surprisingly pleased that she finished her freshman year with a 3.4 grade average.
Just speaking to her on Saturday, she said, "I've cleared everything off my desk so that when I need to study, I can go there and there will be no distractions." So she's still processing this kind of information.
The freedom of campus life, as appealing as it is to most college-age students, can turn out to be pretty stressful. And Kathleen Nadeau says stress intensifies the decision-making problems that lots of ADD kids have.
The more stressed and anxious we are, the more we are thinking with our emotional brain instead of our rational brain.
To preempt the stress, Nadeau says she helps her college-bound students come up with plans for exercise, eating well, and setting a realistic class schedule.
I'm much more likely to tell them don't sign up for any classes that start before 11 a.m. rather than go to bed at 11. That's not going to happen.
Talking to Emily yesterday, as she made her way to class, she said she's really trying to use all the advice and see what works best for her. For example, her freshman year, she had another student take notes for her so that she could pay attention in class.
And then I realized later that it was so much easier for me to take the notes instead of having someone take them for me.
Emily's mom says finding her own way is really serving her well.
She really, I think, has very good self-awareness now. And I think that learning strategies makes her feel strong.
And perhaps better prepared to keep distraction at bay. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
This week's news isn't just rattling investors. It's also providing an interesting lesson for those studying the economy. Lena Borst teaches high schoolers at the Bronx School for Law and Finance.
It was one of those times that we call teachable moments where current events just takes over whatever curriculum you are, and they can learn so much more from what they're actually seeing in the news than anything in the textbook at that point.
Her lesson plan for Monday morning was supposed to focus on investment plans and planning for the student's financial future.
So all of a sudden, we have the Lehman Brothers declaring bankruptcy. The juniors that I was teaching that day are just coming into the finance program. So for a lot of them, all of this is new information. So a lot of it was, why in the world is this happening? Why is the economy struggling so much? When will it pick up? What does this mean? Does this mean I'll ever have a job? Will it ever get better?
And why weren't there more warning signs? The students are asking whether or not the government should step in to help struggling companies.
Especially some of the older ones realize that hopefully it is more of a cycle, that there will be recovery. They also understand that New York City is such a finance city, so they understand that some of those tax dollars go for their schools, things like that. I asked one of them today, well, how do you feel about still going into the finance world? And she said, well, I still want to go into it, but it makes me very nervous. Like, I'm a lot more scared than I was before.
Boris says her juniors and seniors are quickly realizing that sometimes things don't always go according to plan. For instance, AIG and some of the other struggling companies usually offer internships to students at the Bronx School of Law and Finance.
We had students at AIG and Lehman Brothers both this summer. We had students at Deloitte & Touche, at KPMG. We've had students at Bank of New York before. It makes them a little bit more nervous, too, because this is a big driver of our Academy of Finance at our school to be able to offer these internships, especially when they work hard. And they're now realizing that sometimes it becomes a little harder to find those internships, too.
Finally, we asked Lena Bors what she found most surprising about teaching during these interesting economic times.
That students who are 16, 17, 18 years old have such an interest and an awareness in finance at such a young age. I have a bunch of students that all want to be accountants, and they think accounting is just the best thing ever. And I love that passion.
Lena Bors, a teacher of finance and history at the Bronx School of Law and Finance. There is still an internship available at AIG next summer, according to the company's website.
Though students will need to travel, the listing is for an internship in Houston.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. In Washington, D.C. this summer, the Archdiocese and the city agreed on a plan to convert 7 financially strapped Catholic schools to public charter schools. As classes begin, the question is, how will that change the schools? And to find out, NPR's Claudio Sanchez visited with teachers and families at Holy Comforter St. Cyprian Catholic School.
Pamela Mills was among the first to hear that her parish school was going to have to close and reopen as a public charter school this fall.
In a way, I felt a little sad, you know, talking about the conversion.
As a longtime parishioner at Holy Comforter St. Cyprian Catholic Church in Northeast Washington, D.C., she wasn't sure she wanted her 10-year-old daughter, Eldora, to attend a school that would no longer allow children to praise Jesus.
We wanted her to have that faith-based education.
But when it came time to vote, 97% of parents approved the conversion. Today, there are few reminders this was once a Catholic school. The marquee in front of the school now reads, Center City Public Charter School, tuition free. Inside, the small altar in the cafeteria where kids used to start the school day with a prayer and a bowl of cereal is gone. Gone, too, are the crucifixes, the portraits of Pope Benedict, and St. Cyprius, the martyred 3rd-century bishop of Carthage. But it's okay, says Mills. Her daughter will still receive religious instruction.
She's not missing out on it at all. You know, she get the Sunday school, she get the mass, she get the oratory on Saturday. So these days, I'm feeling good.
And not having to pay tuition anymore.
That's a big relief.
It was the financial burden on families and the archdiocese that led to the conversion proposal. The church was spending about $7,500 per student, but the most it could ask parents to pay was $4,500. And even that was too much for Mills and other families. Now, taxpayers will pay for all 7 schools involved in the conversion at a cost of $8,500 to $9,000 per student.
We now have the money that we need to do the job.
Christian White is the school's new principal. He says everyone, teachers, staff, and administrators, have all gotten long overdue pay raises of 10 to 20%. Now there's money for special education, an expanded pre-K program, a new dance teacher, more classroom aides, and Cess White money for a more robust curriculum.
The parts of the academic program that were excellent, we retained. So everything was woven together through the standards-based curriculum.
In many ways, the new curriculum is similar to the Catholic school curriculum, except everything that kids now learn is tethered to the city's public school standards and tests. Still, you just can't sweep a school's Catholic identity and mission under the rug, says White. So he's hanging on to the values that have always been taught here.
Collaboration, compassion, discipline, integrity, justice, peacemaking, perseverance, and respect.
These values are one big reason most parents are staying, but it's the school's strong academic reputation that's drawn so many new families. The school's student population has jumped by at least a third, although there's now talk among parents that the new kids will be unruly, harder to handle.
The word out there was, oh, it's going to be terrible because we're going to get those kids.
That's Mary Ann Stanton, head of the nonprofit group created by the Archdiocese to oversee the conversion.
Those kids are our kids. They're our children. They're the children of the District of Columbia, where education should be at the top. And we're going to help that happen.
More than 1,000 Catholic schools across the country have closed in the last 8 years because they couldn't afford to stay open. Now, says Stanton, Catholic schools have a choice. They can continue to serve as public charter schools and become one more option in urban public education. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.